Welcome back. Our guest this week is Michigan State's new state police director, Colonel Joe Gasper. Our lead story, it's a he said, she said analysis of whether a gas tax increase was on the table. On the OTR panel, Zachary Gorchow, Shayna Roth, and Bill Ballinger. Sit in with us as we get the inside out, off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to Off the Record. Well, a busy, busy week on the road front as the governor says one thing and the Republicans say another. Let's take a look. The governor tells reporters that she has had a couple of meetings with the two Republican leaders, but she claims they have not yet given her a real plan to fix the roads. But the Senate Republican leader counters the Republicans have given her plenty of plans to consider. So is there a real Republican plan? It's a classic she said, he said exchange.
Thus far, we have seen nothing of that sort. And I think that's the problem.
So far, after four different proposals provided by the legislature to her, all we've gotten from her on those is unacceptable. No negotiation, no retort, no offer for changes.
So the senator argues she's the one not negotiating, to which she retorts,
in order to have a legitimate negotiation, you got to come to the table with something worth talking about.
The governor explains she still wants to see some real alternatives to her plan to raise the gas tax by 45 cents. Mr. Shirky contends they put a lower gas tax hike right in front of her. And the governor denies it. Yet another he said, she said.
Did they put on the table a gas tax hike?
We have had very short conversations about the MIPSTER's idea that they've had.
So is that a yes to my question?
Have they put on the table a gas tax hike? No, not in any significant way, no.
But yes, Tim, gas tax was part of that contemplation.
The Senate Republican and House Republican Speaker and the governor all say they will continue to talk about roads and the budget. And while she talks about a possible government shutdown, not predicting one, the Republicans disagree that there's a problem.
What I think is wrong is to hold the budget process hostage because we are unwilling to tax every driver in our state 45 cents. I'm asking the governor to meet us in the middle.
The middle ground on the roads and the budgets? Well, they're not there yet. All right, so what do you guys make of this?
I mean,
that's an interesting exchange, isn't it?
If there was a honeymoon period between bipartisan, you know, between the divided government, it is definitely over at this point. I mean, when you have the governor coming out after making a phone call with the leadership and being like, they're not giving me any proposals, they're not doing it. I think she said they need to stop screwing around. And then you've got both leaderships coming out and saying, hey, we've been giving her proposals. She's not working with us. She's putting what we want aside. It's going to be fiery from here on out.
Everything is at stake here. This is the governor's major proposal, fixing the dam roads. Republicans generally are not predisposed to voting for tax increases, so the possibility that they might or would even consider it is fraught with peril. And I've said it for a while that I think they will figure this out, but it could very well be at 11 p.m. on September 30th under the pressure cooker of a possible partial government shutdown.
The significance of yesterday to me was, and I've been wrong before, you had the leader of the Senate admit for the first time that he put a gas tax hike in front of her. Did you hear him say that?
No.
Yes, he did.
He could be talking about the lifting the sales tax off of gasoline and replacing it with a new gas tax.
Zach, I was there. The question was, did you put a gas tax hike in front of her?
Well, how do you define gas tax hike?
Well, holy cow, do I have to explain everything here?
That's the problem. That's that nuanced here.
Yeah.
In the Republican world, lifting the sales tax off of gasoline and replacing it with, say, a 15 cents per gallon fuel tax would probably be considered a gas tax hike. They may say it's revenue neutral, but it is a new gas tax. Now, granted, Senator Shirky has been the one who said he's more predisposed than Speaker Chatfield to new revenue, but I didn't hear him say, you know, this is the problem. They're not coming out and saying what they're proposing. If Senator Shirky said we want to do the sales tax shift plus an additional 10, 15, whatever cents, then we know what they're talking about, but no one knows what they're talking about.
The speaker also said the governor is holding on to her 45 cents. Governor, meet us in the middle. Now, how am I to interpret that? In the middle of what? The middle of downtown capital of Michigan Avenue or the middle of 45 cents?
No, I don't think so. Probably raising revenue somewhere between zero and $2.5 billion. Believe me, Chatfield and Shirky are not talking about compromising with a 20-cent hike in the gas tax. Not going to happen, Tim.
Mm-hmm. We've had several legislative Republicans who've said a 10-cent hike in the gas tax, and I'm talking about a net hike of 10 cents would be too much. So, you know, you tell me, does that compute to the legislative Republican leadership advocating for a net 20-cent per gallon tax hike? No, that's not where they're at right now.
Let me just go back to the beginning here. Remember there were calls after the governor's battle cry, let's raise the gas tax 45 cents a gallon, for putting it up on the board in the House and Senate. Let's have a vote on it. That was back at the start of the year.
Yeah.
But I think Shirky and Chatfield decided, no, that sounds too mean, because we know, and she knows by now, that this proposal of hers, very unimaginative, I think very bad, obviously very unpopular, would go down in flames.
But very bold.
Bold, but a disaster. And it would have soured.
Is there such a thing as a bold disaster?
It would have soured the relationship between her and the legislature right from the beginning. And I don't think we would have had auto insurance rate reform if that climate had then ensued. Okay, so they didn't do that. But now, guess what? People are talking about doing it again.
Well, the
saying,
word
okay,
yesterday
Governor,
afternoon was they were going to put it up on the board.
Well,
and
they still may, Tim. There's a long time between now and October 1st.
Here's the significance of the story. She called Mr. Shirky and said, don't do it.
Well,
and he agreed.
He may have agreed, but,
for the moment.
You know, she doesn't have any ability to command Shirky what to do, and he may have gone along with it for now. I'm saying there are 5 weeks between now and October 1st. It could still happen, and it may happen, and it probably deserves to happen to the governor because, you know what? In my opinion, we shouldn't have been waiting for a proposal from legislators all along. We should have been waiting for the governor to walk back 45 cents hike in the basket.
When has a governor or any legislator negotiated against themselves? I mean, that's just ridiculous.
I'm saying her proposal was so bad.
Why would she abandon her own proposal while waiting for the Republicans to put something
because
forth? Now, granted, if they put something forth, then you move into the middle.
But she doesn't think it was bad. She thinks it's the only way to do it.
Right now, it's the only thing out there.
She secretly thinks it's bad.
Okay, wait,
politically,
Bill Ballinger
it's a disaster.
Secretly understands what the governor is thinking.
Duly noted. Billy, I think in this area, look, she had to start the bidding someplace. That's what negotiations are. So unilaterally,
start with a 45 or 47.
Start high, come down.
But you're just talking about one thing. What about all these other proposals we've been debating all summer that the Republicans have come up with that
what
have
proposals?
Been castigated?
Right. And we don't know
the
that they
stuff,
officially
anything.
Presented any of those. Shirky said that there were four proposals presented to her. We have no idea what they look like, and they won't tell us.
It is time for
we
both
may
sides.
Not.
Look, it is time for all the players to put all of their cards on the table and let the public take a look at it, and then we can have a serious debate.
That's what the news media would like. But if you're an elected politician, you don't want that.
Understand that.
Well, look, this is sort of reminiscent of the 2009 situation with the budget. Andy Dillon, then the House Speaker, refused to put his budget ideas on the table. The Senate Republicans did and had all the leverage because they could say, look, we're going to solve this deficit with $1.2 billion in cuts. Governor Granholm and the House Democrats didn't know how to deal with that. They were on their heels the whole time. Now, granted, it's a different dynamic now that you have a unified legislature, but in general, usually the side that decides not to put some, you know, cards on the table, and I'm not even talking about speaking to the governor, I'm saying, look, public, here's how we think this should be handled, tends to get knocked on their heels. We'll see what happens.
Do you think they should put the plan out?
I do. I mean, I think that if you want to get more people on your side, you should at least be able to prove we have given her legitimate plans. Because they can say we've given her four proposals or however many proposals, but those proposals could look like, you know, gutting education, gutting clean drinking water to pay for the roads. We don't know what they look like, so we're in some sort of imaginary
hypothesis. Or it could be a proposal to meet next Thursday at 4 o'clock.
Here's the thing. They've watched as Governor Whitmer has been, you know, taking a beating for many, many months for this 45 cent per gallon gas tax increase.
There you go.
And they know, like Shada said, if they put out there, here's how we're going to get there, and it's pretty unappealing, which it probably will be, they're going to get beaten up too. The problem is, how do you get the thing over the finish line when you have one side who's just playing cat and mouse? And it, you know, they'll deny it, but it sure looks like they're trying to run out the clock. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get down to, you know, the last week of September. And this is what the school people and the school retirement people are very worried about, that they're going to be down to the wire, and all they're going to have left is the MEPSers idea and the sales tax shift, and everybody, including the governor, will say, well, we don't have any other choice. We're going to have to do this.
And I will say this, to go back to whether or not they would put the gas tax on the board. If I'm Shirky, I'm keeping that in my pocket as long as possible, because it's possible he could pull that out as some sort of trump card and say, look, we are down to the wire here. Either you go with what we have, or I'm putting this up on the board.
Let's
and you have to deal
explain
with
the politics of putting that up on the board, okay? The Republicans are not going to vote for it, so the Democrats sit there and say, do we vote yes on our governor's tax increase, which we know is not going to pass, or do we stiff our governor and vote no? That's the conundrum that they would face, which is why they would put it up on the board, correct?
And
correct. Look, this happened, let's go back again to a previous shutdown situation. I don't remember if, I think it was in 07, the House Democrats, then in the majority, put on the board the cuts Senate Republicans had proposed,
and
it went down in flames because the House Republicans would not vote for it, and it gave them considerable leverage to say, look, House Republicans, you've been calling for cuts. You won't vote for the cuts that the Senate Republicans passed. Come, let's start talking about revenue. That's the tactic they're trying to use there.
I'm not so sure they're running the clock. I still believe, call me silly, okay, I still think they want to do this, and they want to do it in a responsible way, and I think they're trying to be fair with one another.
I don't think it's necessary. Their goal from the beginning to run out the clock, but their idea is if we can't get something that's acceptable to us, we're happy to run out the clock, go with a continuation budget. I think Zach stumbled onto the truth when he said, if you are the Republicans,
hey, Baxter, you know what?
If you are the Republicans and you have the governor's very unpopular, very bad proposal hanging out there, what is your motivation to come out with some public plan? Like Zach said, you're going to get beaten yourself about the ears, and then you're in the same boat she is. You don't want to be there.
Mr. Shirky said we're pivoting now, and I think this story was misinterpreted. We're pivoting to work on the budget, but he said I'm still open to working on the revenue or on the road package at the same time.
Sure.
But they're also willing to give her a budget that doesn't include a roads plan at this point. They had been saying that, you know, we're going to do all of these together because that's what Whitmer really wanted to do. But now they're saying, hey, look, if we can get a budget without a roads plan, we're going to do that.
That's her only leverage, though. That's why she can't give that away.
Well, we'll know if things really are heading toward an impasse if the Republicans decide to send the governor a budget that is basically a, you know, on transportation, doesn't have big new revenue. If they decide to go down that road, if they, you know, put in a transportation, a budget to the governor on her desk that doesn't have, you know, the kind of new revenue the governor's calling for and basically says take it or leave it, then we'll know, okay, this is heading toward a shutdown.
All right, so yay or nay, at the end, before October 1st, do we have a deal on the budget and the roads, Mr. Gorchow?
I'd been saying yes, so I feel like I should continue to say yes, but I will stick by the fact I think it goes down to the wire.
Okay.
Hard maybe.
You ought to go into politics.
It goes down to the wire, but no. We'll get a continuation budget, and it'll continue on past that.
The odds are increasing, that's for sure.
All right. That was a painful process right there. Let's call in the colonel. All right, talk about what's going on the roads. Colonel, come on in, man. The State Police Director, Colonel Joseph Gasper, began his career in the State Police in 1998 in the UP. He was on Governor Granholm's security detail and the same for Governor Snyder. A native of Newaygo, he holds a BA degree from Northern Michigan University. Colonel, welcome to Off the Record.
Thank you very much.
Is it true, in talking about doing the show yesterday, you thought about putting your weapon on the desk?
There was some conversation about that.
So should I say bring it or not?
Let's use that as a gauge how the questions go.
Oh, that seems fair enough. Shana, be careful.
I will. So recently the legislature passed and the governor signed the civil asset forfeiture law. So there's been some changes there. How has that been going? Has MSP and other law enforcement agencies noticed a dramatic shift in these changes to civil asset forfeiture?
Well, I think that from that perspective, our goal has always been all along to make sure that we're putting together really good investigations, and then the forfeiture is kind of a secondary component to that. So from our perspective, there's not a significant impact in that.
So you haven't seen a big loss in revenue or anything like that as far as money-wise?
No, we haven't.
Have some of your colleagues abused that in the past?
Well, I think that, from the perspective of how other agencies do investigations, I'm not exactly up to speed on how they do it or what their probable cause would be or anything like that. From the state police perspective, it's always been put together a good, strong investigation, and the secondary items like forfeiture will follow.
So you firmly believe that there needs to be a conviction before you take stuff and keep it?
Well, I wouldn't say that I believe that there needs to be a conviction, but there definitely needs to be a strong investigation with good supporting evidence before we move forward with something like that.
Colonel, how do you see your tenure as director? Do you see it as a continuation pretty seamless from your predecessor, or were there some challenges coming in that you saw you needed to address, and have you gone in a slightly different direction with the department? What do you think?
Well, from a similarity standpoint, obviously, there are 18 other directors of the state police. I'm the 19th. And first and foremost, we need to concentrate on the troopers, because the troopers support the public safety. That's what, when the public calls, that's what they expect, is a trooper to respond. From a standpoint of where I would like to concentrate, a number of things, but one specifically is diversity. And making sure that the department is as diverse as possible, making sure that we're having those conversations that can at times get a little bit comfortable.
What People are move. The percentages right now in terms of African American, Hispanics, and so forth?
Well, right now, where we are, we're about 86% white male. And then the remainder makes up some of the minority groups.
Including gender?
We do qualify gender as in the minority group. So
they're part of the 14%.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
How do you increase diversity particularly in these times?
Well, I think that there's a number of things you can do. Probably the biggest thing is making sure that we're a modern police agency. We need to look at diversity as a concept and a culture, not something that we're doing because it's the flavor of the day. So making sure that we are concentrating on diversity from a standpoint of race, gender, sexual orientation, but then also making sure that in our case, and in the majority of the cases with law enforcement across the nation, the majority of law enforcement is white male. And so they have to see themselves in the diversity initiative. It's crucial.
Does the Michigan State Police have a racial profiling problem? The American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan seems to think it does.
No, we do not have a racial profiling issue.
So where's the disconnect there? They seem to think that there are disproportionate numbers of African Americans being pulled over in the city of Detroit.
So we've done historically over the course of the last couple of years specifically, we've reviewed our traffic stop data, and it shows that our traffic stops are consistent with the demographics of the state. So I think that's
in light of this discussion about diversity. You were on the force when Mizetsu had a problem on the kneeling for the national anthem. Mm-hmm. What did you think when you heard that story?
Well, I think that, the biggest thing that we need to remember as in this particular situation as state directors of state departments is that what we do and what we say means a lot to a lot of different people. And so it's important to think about that.
Was she wrong?
It really is not, my position to say whether or not she was right or she was wrong. That's not something that I would have done, but I don't feel as though it's my position.
Should she have stepped down?
I think that, you know, that was something between her and Governor Snyder to work out. And again, I'm concentrating on moving forward and learning from our lessons, both good and bad, and not trying to get bogged down with some of our issues from the past.
What goes through your mind when, if you see, whether it's NFL players or somebody else, kneeling during the national anthem as a form of protest because they believe police treatment of African Americans is a problem in America?
So I think that, you know, one of the things that we have to concentrate on is if we have people or if we have groups that feel that's important to them, then we've got to get around tables like this and we have to have some conversation. The solutions are in dialogue. And once the dialogue is complete, then we have to move past dialogue into action. And that's one of the things from a diversity standpoint that I want to make sure that we are concentrating on. And so one of the things that I've done early on is I've met with a lot of community groups, particularly in Southeast Michigan. And so now I have invited some of them to participate as role players in our scenarios in our recruit school. And so hopefully coming out to the recruit school to have some of those conversations both beforehand and afterhand and then participating in that, you know, we can learn something from each other.
Let me ask you about something completely different. Forensics. Back in the 60s, there really was no such thing. And then you got DNA coming in. And Michigan's forensics section was once considered a national leader. You had people testifying around the country and in foreign countries. How is your forensics unit today? Is it staffed up? Are you doing what you think you need to have done there, or what?
Yeah, there's always room for continuous improvement, but I do think that we continue to be a leader in the area. You know, we are constantly looking at backlogs and turnaround times and making sure that we're as progressive as possible with technology. It is a challenging thing because as technologies increase, that allows us to do more with the evidence. And so sometimes when we deal with submissions and submission policies and what evidence to use and not use and from a priority standpoint, that can tend to add to some of our issues.
Have you had any breakthroughs in forensics that have really helped solve cases that, you know, wouldn't have happened without your forensics?
Yeah, there's a number of tactics that we're using. There's a lot of technology. One of the pieces of field technology is the TrueNARC, which is basically a field operated piece of technology that can identify controlled substances through packaging. So that's been a big one.
Assault ban weapons. Assault weapons from purchase.
I think that, you know, that's a legislative issue for people to that are not in public
safety. For the gun, Colonel, okay? What is your position? Should they be banned?
I think that it's important that we keep police officers armed to a point where we can respond effectively to whatever situation that we are asked to respond to. And so I think that that's the important part.
Would you favor a ban on assault weapons?
I think that when assault weapons are out there, that law enforcement needs to be prepared to respond accordingly.
Okay, let me ask, why are you not answering that question?
Well, I think that, again, that's a question for the legislature. Both.
What if the governor calls you up tomorrow and say, Colonel, what do you think we ought to do? And you say, well, that's a legislative thing, Governor. I'm sorry, I can't help you. See you later.
I think that sometimes public safety, as difficult as it is easier than politics. And so I'm thankful that I don't have to tackle the tough issue of figuring out how to or whether or not to control assault
weapons. What about weapons on school property?
Well, I think that when it comes to school safety, that when we're talking about school resource officers or state troopers, I mean, clearly they have to have weapons. I think that when, you know, there are things that we can do to make sure that schools are safer first before we start dealing with the weapons
How about
thing.
Arming teachers.
Well, I think before arming teachers, we need to make sure that we're hardening facilities, that we're testing our emergency operation planning with the schools, and that we're constantly drilling.
What about open carry? Does that cause a problem for your officers, or is it a non-issue?
I think it's a non-issue, really. We've come to understand that, you know, that's an expression that they want to engage in, and you know, we don't have much of an issue with it.
Has MSP, since the, you know, sort of continuation of mass shootings, has MSP changed tactics or education, training, things like that?
I wouldn't say that we've changed anything, but what we've done is we've made sure that from our perspective, training and exercising those plans are very important, and then also making sure that we're coordinating with our local partners, because there's really not a single agency that's going to handle everything anymore. So if, you know, we have a situation like that, it's going to be a multi-jurisdictional response. So it's going to be important that we train together so that we can respond together in the most appropriate fashion.
All right, you want to take a deep breath? We'll come back for OT.
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Are you sure?
Yeah, there you go.
Go to WKER.org for more of our conversation with the good Colonel.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.